again, that's somewhat disingenuous. You need the starter, which is expensive, and you need the entire reactor, which, again, although they built an experimental that wasn't a high energy capable device, they didn't scale it up, and it's, you know, otherwise the Chinese would, you know, put one together in a couple of in a year or two. It's going to take them probably 5 or 10 years to scale it up and test it. So it's not as simple as simply a ball of thorium.
Yeah. So they say that their device is 350 liters and has been tested up to 600 Celsius, which is quite in line with whatever the temperature for thorium is there. And the salt circulates from salt tank via pump and back, completing the loop, and they have all of the device ready for you to purchase. The piping is equipped with salt pressure sensors, flow meter, bypass filtration valves, and can be customized to house their own equipment. So, if there was a hope, they wouldn't be offering something that you can purchase, this is European, this is not something that is somewhere in China, but it's European company. So they give you 25-liter molten salt tank with everything that you need in it, and go ahead, do it. You want to check it? Check it. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of guys who promise to sell you things and check it for yourself, and sometimes they send you stuff that doesn't quite work, and sometimes they send you absolutely nothing. We talked a couple of weeks ago about solid-state batteries, where the guy said, you know, wait in 3 months and you can buy your own motorcycle, and the motorcycle includes a solid-state battery. Meanwhile, it's been about 3 months and no sign of the solid-state battery. I mean, there's one or two mock-ups that they're showing video of some lab someplace doing some tests that different people interpret differently. So people run scams all the time. I don't know if this is a scam. It could be just a delusion. Remember the good old days when we talked about room temperature superconductors? You know, those were PhDs. You were very impressed with those PhDs. So, you know, there's a scam born every minute. Sometimes it's PhDs. Sometimes it's CEOs. You know, they come in different shapes and sizes.
Okay, thank you very much. And the last one. As Roy says, our progress is made mostly by young people, by kids. And that is about cutting edge of EV and diesel electric trucks. So the one was delivered in February 6th to the client, for the first client. And they started like 2 years ago. So we have two guys, Chase and Eric, and they are founders of a company that was based on student loans. So they bought their first truck, which was repaired during their last semester. And now they have a company that is called Edison Motors. It's a private company with majority of shares owned by founders. They have a quite interesting thing, which is a diesel electric hybrid truck. And that for me looks like a sort of Tesla, which they have wheels. Wheels are powered by electric motors, so they have a high torque. And then you have a diesel generator, and the diesel generator is connected to the motor working as the, I'm not sure if it's a high voltage generator, but it generates electricity, and that electricity is connected to those motors. But we're talking about 330 kilowatts hour. So this is a quite strong the power for those electric axles, electric drive axles. They say that they offer 70% of saving, up to 70% of saving on fuel. And the motors work on 70 to 100 high duty cycle. It is very important, especially in logging, when you're working in forestry. And of course, the company is from Canada. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know these guys. I don't know where they came from. I don't know where they're going. Whether it's to you know, to a mansion or to a prison. It has the stink of perpetual motion. It reminds me of the illustration of someone sticking the plug of a power strip into the power strip. You know, it sounds like, you know, it's reprocessing, it's burning fuel to give electricity that the electricity runs the motor, but somehow it gives you more power to the motor than came from just burning the gasoline in the first place. And I think I saw one point where it says it allows for up to a savings of 100%. And that's impossible. That's against the laws of physics. So I tend to put these young gentlemen in the same place that electric truck company where they basically had no motor or way of actually moving the thing. They just dragged it up to the top of a hill and then they loosened the brake and it rolled down the hill and everyone congratulated themselves on. You know, inexpensive fuel and such until he went to jail. So, again, I tend to be a little less optimistic than you might be.
Well, actually, you're absolutely right. With only one correction, I'm not optimistic about those guys. I can see young guys who have a product, who present the product, who deliver the product. And it's the beginning, and we would know. I love the cabin they made, absolutely amazing. The cabin of the heavy truck is absolutely amazing. It is for three people inside, and I believe they use. For the first truck they made, a 1969 Kenworth truck, and only changed the cabin for it. And of course, they throw out the original engine and put the heavy-duty generator, diesel generator on it. I'm not sure how much of renovation it makes, but it is something that is not common, Dr. Roy.
KD2F, are you rejoining?
Yes, George.
Freewheeling is illegal on the roads in the United States.
Okay, was Wesley talking about freewheeling? I missed it.
You don't go and just go into neutral and let no energy or any guidance of a manufactured system of transmission to let you go. You don't go with freewheeling of energy. That was, in the late 1930s. Freewheeling illegal.
okay, that was me. I was alluding to the company called Nikola, Tesla's first name, and I believe that guy who ran that scam is now in jail. So he's getting his comeuppance. So don't worry, he didn't get away with anything in the end.
All right. Thank you, Roy. KDQFIU.
You're welcome, George. So I don't know what to tell you, Leslie. Maybe the design for the exterior is impressive. I just kind of saw them try to get a truck into a garage, and apparently it was stalling every 5 minutes, so it wasn't terribly impressive personally to me. We'll see what happens. They're free to continue developing. The underlying theory doesn't smell right. I see a lot of obvious violations to the laws of thermodynamics going on. So maybe they'll prove me completely wrong, and that'll be a big laugh on their part. So I wish them luck. I wouldn't invest a dime, but I wish them luck.
Interesting. That reminds me when I was first introduced to symposiums, I was told the first rule of communication is contradict. So you're talking to the scientist or you're talking to science-oriented person and you contradict. You disagree with him, not because you disagree. You might completely agree. Just try to think how to oppose what he's talking. And then I ask, and what is the reason? And they told me, well, summary. If you're talking the same and you just say yes, 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 you are much far from discovery or much far from anything that is new in the discussion. Back to you.
Yeah, I can't give you any absolutes, but you can't just kind of be goggle-eyed and agree and accept everything that anyone tells you. Otherwise, you would believe in cold fusion and room temperature superconductors and ghosts and goblins and witches and warlocks and all manner of nonsense that's already, unfortunately, infest too many people's fevered dreams. So you have to kind of go on your knowledge as your basis of information and the way you perceive the universe to work. If you want to throw out the laws of thermodynamics, then that leaves you with a lot of interesting things that theoretically can't be proved to be able to be done. So, yeah, I mean, you want to kind of open. It kind of goes back to when I close the technical nets. Keep an open mind, but don't keep it wide enough that your brain falls out.
Hey, C2PO.
Yes, Jeff.
I think I've been listening to the net for about 10 years, and the statement that Wes just made explains just about everything I've heard during those 10 years. AC2PO, back to net.
Yeah, we agree. Like I said, I see nothing wrong in keeping an open mind, but you have to put some limitations on it, because otherwise you'll go down so many rabbit holes and waste so much time that nothing useful will ever come of anything. Occasionally science gets trapped in old thought processes. Before Einstein, people believed in Newtonian physics because it was the best explanation. And there were some brilliant scientists who, even after Einstein published his work, dismissed it. The guy who did the Lorentz transform mathematics. A brilliant mathematician, didn't believe in a single thing of relativity, even though his Lorentz translation equations were at the foundation of it all. So So sometimes it screws science up, but in the whole nature of the thing, it benefits us a lot more than it harms us. So I understand why we continue to act like that. So you're free to think and believe what you want, Wes. I again caution people not to keep a completely wide open mind of things. You have to be a little bit skeptical about some things, and because otherwise con people and fools and delusional people will kind of wrap you up in pseudoscience talk and down a rabbit hole we all go.
You're both right, Intuition. Discrepancies between experimental data, theoretical predictions, or established paradigms often acting as a drivers for new discoveries rather than proving science wrong. That was exactly what I was trying to say. So in some conversations, it is required to be adventurous, and both of the people know that they do it on purpose, not because they think this way. Back to you.
Okay, it's up to the individual. Unfortunately, if you're not very strict in your methodology and you get a little bit forward beyond your skis, it can destroy your career. The gentlemen involved in Cold Fusion, were almost pariahs by the end of their lives. Their professional career had fundamentally ended with that announcement that was way too early for the type of research and results that they had. It requires scientists to, if you have extremely strange results, you have to have extremely good proof of your extremely strange results. You can't just kind of plop them down and hope that the popular press will steamroll all the scientists who understand that it's all nonsense.
Pons and I can't recall who was the next guy. Their problem was, of course they were wrong, but their problem was they believed in it. So we're not talking about two people trying to take opposite sides, and both of them, they know that they just do it on purpose. Those guys were believers in what they saw. They simply didn't check it enough before publishing. And the result was obvious. Back to you.
Yeah, I believe it was Fleischman. And belief is not the important thing. Proof is the important thing. Belief is an important thing if you're going to run a religion. But they're working in science. They're not working in religion last time I checked. So, again, it was their error. You do not announce findings that are revolutionary without a lot of proof behind them. And they basically just ran because I guess they wanted glory and because they were incredibly wrong about their results. And unfortunately, they paid a rather severe price. It destroyed most of their professional career.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. I give back to you.
Okay, very good, Wes. Thank you for your participation. John, W2ZC, if you're still around, which I think you are, if you want to ask your question, I'll be happy to hear it.
WB2BXL with a question.
Yeah, sure, Frank.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, there was a story a number of years ago. A child who tried to build, I remember seeing the book in one of the bookstores that he wrote. Kid tried to build a nuclear reactor by collecting radium watches and extracting the radium to try to get a science merit badge or an Eagle Scout badge or something like that. I don't know if anybody recalls that story, but you kind of brought that to mind when you were talking about trying to build your own reactor. There was also a Young Sheldon episode where the FBI knocks on his door when he tries to buy uranium, I think it is, from Canada, to build a reactor. Anyway, I was wondering if anybody remembers that story. I know I could probably look it up. Go ahead, Ruth.
Yeah, I remember that. He did it in his garage, like all great stories. It took place in a garage. I don't think it was radium. I think he collected americium. It's a radioactive product that used to be in smoke detectors. So he got a whole bunch of old smoke detectors and pulled the radioactive material out. It's a known kind of toy demonstration. It's not efficient enough to do anything or get much in the way of power. It doesn't scale at all. So it's kind of a real neat experiment that scares adults, but I do remember it. And there was also another far lesser story that I just caught on a YouTube of some guy who decided he collected elements. He's one of those guys who, you know, has little specimen bottles of all the elements, and he wanted some radioactive elements. So he found a place in the United States didn't have any kind of protection against random people asking for radioactive samples. And he sent it off to, I think it was Australia. It could have been New Zealand. I have a problem figuring out the different accents. They sound the same to me. And he got visited by a lot of federal agents from that country because it's not legal. And he got into a lot of trouble that way. And the company in the United States, I think, put a limit on shipping it out of country.
Might have been Australia, because I remember, in fact, probably did see on a podcast or YouTube that Australia strictly regulates nuclear reactors and nuclear materials, and I think only one nuclear research, strictly regulated nuclear research site in the whole country. So that would make sense, but you know, it could have been New Zealand also. But anyway, Australia comes to mind. That may be the right one. Good.
Okay, I think so, simply because it has a significantly greater population, so there's more of a chance of some element collector getting into trouble. Because, you know, unfortunately, I think this particular specimen was innocuous enough that there was no local U.S. limitations, but once it got into probably Australia, then, you know, he just had lots and lots of trouble. But that was just, he just wanted it as a sample, because he just collected samples of every element he could put together. The kid with the Boy Scouts was in the United States, and they didn't you know, trigger anything with radioactive purchases, because like I said, they just kind of, I guess, went to a junk place or something and found a lot of thrown away smoke detectors. You know, they're very popular, and they had little strips of radioactive americium. So he just peeled them away and kind of brewed his own nuclear starter.
That was Amory, tune 241.
Okay. Yeah, it comes out of smoke detectors, or used to. I don't think they use them anymore for smoke detectors.
Indeed.
Yeah, I would wonder if you have enough of them, if you generate enough heat to make a crude... I remember the brand name is Snap Generator in the Apollo era. You probably know what I'm talking about. You know, one of these things I think they had. I think the Voyager and some other space probes run off them these days. I'm wondering, that may be the best you can do, but it sounds like the stuff probably doesn't have enough energy to do even that. But go ahead.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's very inefficient. You couldn't probably run an electric watch on the current that it generated. It just definitionally it was a nuclear reactor, but as far as energy use, you couldn't use it for any useful power device. I can't quite make that out. Is that you, Ed?
Yes, it is.
Ah, hello again, Ed. Long time no talk. Glad to hear you.
All right.
One of the clever energy demonstrations I saw, no relation to nuclear power, I saw a number of years ago, one of the local hams here built a miniature steam engine that turned a little generator to run his QRP rig. Not a Rube Goldberg, but incredibly clever.
Okay, you sound a little bit better, Ed.
About somebody suggesting that the radioactive element is smoke detectors. I'm more worried about radioactive poison. If you don't know what you're doing, than anything else. Another comment is, if you want a radioactive sample, bananas are slightly radioactive.
Yeah, they have radioactive. They have potassium that's radioactive. It's an isotope that decays. But yeah, I mean that's kind of the old joke that you have after you eat a banana, you get emissions of antimatter. Positively charged positrons. Are emitted from the decay of the radioactive potassium in a given banana. So, yeah, that's true.
The levels are very, very low. Measurable low, but very, very low.
Yeah, but it's the principle of the thing. At least for me, it's fascinating to think of positrons, which I consider to be very esoteric particles that are coming out of a given banana that you're eating.
But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Ed. I appreciate it, and I hope you come back for more. And we'll talk to you down the line, Ed.
Well, I was running an experiment to make my presence on this net easier, but obviously it didn't work. It didn't hear me until I went back to the old-fashioned message.
Okay, yeah, appears to work.
No, my experiment was the part that didn't work.
Oh.
So I tell you about it.
Okay.
I found out Amazon sells a Bluetooth thing for an amateur radio to me HD. And what they do is the radio and some top of life has a solar mount, the most beat microphone. It's the most beat microphone. The Bluetooth thing to dial a pulse and to radio. So I try it. By the way, it only is made for a broadband using 5R. So I bought this radio specifically the other day. So my hope was I'd be able to walk around the house and be able to communicate on this.
Yeah, I've been repeatedly annoyed by limitations of Bluetooth. They keep on saying that the range is extending, but, you know, whenever I buy a new toy and test it out, it never gets to the other side of the house. It always fails midway. So I've been consistently disappointed by Bluetooth. It's a useful thing to have, but it has way too many limitations. The fidelity is significantly better in the last few generations than it was in Bluetooth 1, 2, and 3 type of things. The audio resolution was terrible back then. But range expansion, I don't think they've quite got right.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I'm always trying to be optimistic. I think they're up to Bluetooth 6. So, you know, eventually I guess I'll buy a 6 Bluetooth and see if it's gotten any better. My guess will be I'll be disappointed once again.
Probably. Don't be wrong, so I'm still where I was. And I'm listening remotely by hand management. I'm coming over to my classes.
Okay.
So this is the next video is the Unity 5R by itself or something?
I didn't quite get that one.
Right, let's see. I'm close up now to the Anthem antenna. It's not working well with the... I've never used this speed on the net before. Is this setup just using the both thing close up to the Anthem antenna? Is that working well enough?
It's pretty good.
I'll say pretty good.
You know, I hope you'll join us again in future Technical Nets. We've missed you these last few months that you haven't been on the air here.
And I've missed you guys too.
Okay, we're a mutual admiration society.
Yeah, that explains it.
Yep. So, Frank, getting back to strange people trying to build nuclear reactors. It's a demonstration. It's a toy. I forget there's a name for it, but it doesn't come to mind. It would be something that you show in a high school science fair if you're going to be the next Bill Gates in the future. So, it just scared the family, it scared everyone, because he had it in his garage. Because I guess he read someplace that if you want to be someone like Wozniak or Gates, you got to do stuff in your garage.
Yeah, well, he did write a book about it. I remember seeing it on the shelves years ago. I don't know how well it sold. I remember who he was. I'd look it up and see if he ever made a career, and he might well have. But I do remember. So you might have at least made something on it. You wrote a book about it. Today, of course, you do a YouTube channel, stuff like that. But this was quite a few years ago. Anyway, yeah, that story came to mind when you were talking about it. Anyway, back to Ned. I know you want to move on here. WB2BX.
Okay, for the people listening, we're talking about a guy named David Hahn, H-A-H-N. He built his reactor in Arkansas back in 2008 when he was 14 years old.
Hey, C2P.
Yes, Jeff.
What about those two kids in Chicago, I think Fred Neal and Justin Casper, who built a thorium feeder for a scavenger hunt, Chicago, University of Chicago. I think it was in the 90s sometime.
Oh, that's interesting. It went right by me. I don't recall that story at all.
Well, I had not heard of it either until my daughter visited the school, you know, looking for information on applying to colleges and whatnot. And my wife and my daughter were being toured around, and they pointed to this, that, and the other, and then they said they do this scavenger hunt. And they were famous for one particular scavenger hunt where two kids built a functional feeder, and the feds got involved.
Yeah, I just looked it up. It was back in 1999. Yes, Ed.
I kind of overemphasize this. It's very easy to poison yourself. It's a plan of those things. Those are the reactors put out a tremendous amount of dangerous radiation. The thorium one sounds to me like it's really problematic. Especially, the nuclear fuel isn't too bad. It's the fission results can be much, much, much worse than the strong materials for dangerous radiation.
AC2GS. Yeah, unfortunately, since radiation is invisible, unless you have the proper equipment, people have been screwing up their lives for the better part of, 130 years? Madame Curie basically died due to complications of radiation sickness and such. And a lot of other people. I mean, there were a lot of young women who applied radioactive material on the hands of watches. I think it was radium. And so eventually, a lot of young women basically had radiation damage to the inside of their mouths. Their jaws basically dissolved. And, in the old days, you would go to a store to buy shoes, and they would have a kind of x-ray device that you could wiggle your toes inside your shoes and see through them. So a lot of people misusing radioactive material. It was used at one point. You could buy it for medicinal purposes. you would run water through an object that had some radioactive residue in it, and it would impart some radioactivity that they thought vitalized your life force and such. So radiation has been skirted around with so many people in more than a century. It's terrible what they've done to themselves. You know, we've talked in the past about one of the people involved in DNA analysis. She was an X-ray crystallographer, and it was not unusual for X-ray crystallographers to suffer from radiation damage because they were always around X-ray generators and such. So radiation is very dangerous. What you can't see can't hurt you.
Yeah, that was Rosalind Franklin who did the X-ray crystallography for Watson and Crick, if I remember correctly, WB2BXO.
Yeah, she was totally scammed because the Nobel committee does not award prizes posthumously. And so the other people lived long enough to get their Nobel Prize, and she unfortunately did not.
Yeah, well, she was the grad student who did the hands-on work, and they probably didn't work with the radiation. Is that essentially the story? Yes.
Yeah, among other things. I mean, she was a woman in the field of science, and her boss, who she worked under, basically took her results and gave them over to Watson and Crick to help with their theory. The story of the discovery of DNA is a fascinating one. People have written a significant number of popular science books on the subject. Linus Pauling was a brilliant chemist, a charming guy, had these beautiful big blue eyes, watery, and he had real charisma for a scientist. You don't really think of charisma. I met him once at an American Chemical Society meeting. And unfortunately, he fell down his own rabbit hole. After he got his Nobel Prize, he decided he was going to revolutionize the world. He tried DNA, but unfortunately, he got the structure completely wrong. The nucleides are inside and bonded to pairs, base pairs. He rotated them 180 degrees and had them twisting with the nucleic bases pointing outward instead of inward. So unfortunately he got that wrong, and then he decided to cap his career by promoting vitamin C for everything and anything. So, yeah, unfortunately. So, lots of interesting stories about the search for the structure of deoxyribonucleic acids.
Yeah, I recall hearing a story a number of years ago with regard to the Nobel, of a guy who got the Nobel even though he had died recently, because the Nobel Committee awarded it without knowing he had died. So ultimately, whoever makes the final decision on those matters decided that was okay, and the money would be awarded to his, and the medal would be awarded to his family, because the committee was unaware he died when they voted to give him the prize. And I don't recall for sure whether you had a doctorate or not, Roy, but those people I know who do almost always have stories about how they were used and abused as graduate students. My understanding is, in many fields, that's kind of part of the rites of passage of getting a doctorate. I'm sure some people on here may want to argue with me on that, but that's what I've heard from some friends who have doctorates. Yes, Wesley, if I remember correctly, you have a doctorate. I don't know if we want to go down this rabbit hole probably go on and on about this. Anyway, back to you, Roy. WB2BXO.
Yeah, unfortunately, you don't even have to be a doctoral student to be used and abused. You know, as an undergraduate student, you know, I took departmental honors and such, and was abused by my professor. He was a kind of antisocial guy. I had decided to do research under him because two of my friends were going to do slightly different type of research under him as well. So it was going to be all three of us. And then the first day of the course, the other two basically dropped out and left me behind. So, you know, I got a little taste of it, and I also knew a lot of grad students and, you know, what they were doing and how they were feeling. It can be an oppressive type of situation, and, you know, I mean, those theses don't write themselves. And, you know, you have to have useful results. You know, just the effort alone doesn't give you a PhD.
Yeah, a friend of mine spent, I forget whether it was 6 or 8 years, getting his doctorate in entomology, and, you know, it sounds like one heck of a rite of passage. Probably one of the reasons I decided to stop with the MBA and decided I had enough. I wasn't doing this anymore. Anyway, I've got to step aside for a while. WB2BXO.
Okay, very good. One of the most instrumental things that made me decide to go into medicine and not getting something like a PhD in chemistry, I had, when I was doing that undergraduate honor research, I was given an old lab book. You know, lab books never die. They just get passed on to the next poor schlumpf. So I got one of the lab's old lab books, and where I was supposed to put my information, and one day I was very bored, and I just rummaged through the earlier entries, and I found a sad little note on the corner of one of the lab pages that said, "Happy New Year." I think it was 12 o'clock a.m., date, the time entry, and the entry was Happy New Year. So I said, I do not think this is for me.
I'm not quite sure I get the point of that. Was it that it was a new year and he missed his professor's deadline or something like that?
No, it means that at midnight New Year, he was stuck in the lab doing lab work.
KC2PL, wouldn't be the first time, and it wouldn't be the last time.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. You know, and if you're into that, then congratulations. It just seemed like a kind of lonely existence. And plus, a lot of PhDs turn out that, you know, there's only about 10 people that they can have a significant conversation about the subject that they're a specialist in. So, it's kind of a significant social dampener, if you will. So, I mean, some people, they're fine with it. I just kind of thought it was, you know, I mean, there's a reason why I'm a generalist. So, you know, becoming a subspecialist in some esoteric little bit and piece, if it doesn't win you things like Nobel Prizes, then, you know, it's kind of sad in some ways. Again, it suits some personalities, not mine.
Absolutely understand and accept it. I've spent probably 35 or 40 years in the sciences with graduate schools or medical schools or what have you, and I know every single one of the people you're talking about, and I've heard all the stories. Some of them are good and some of them bad, but those discoveries do not come from fresh air. They come from people actually working in the lab every single day of their life for a purpose. And I've seen young professors actually do that and become quite successful. And I've seen young postdocs realize that it's not for them and leave and become, I don't know, literary agents or whatever the hell they become. It is a very specific sort of phenomenon. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, that's one of my problems with popularized science histories. They tend to, and I understand why they do it, because it's easier to follow, but they tend to clean things up, and, you know, I've repeatedly said on this technical net that fundamentally science is messy. If it's clean, then, you know, there's something strange about it. But most discoveries, just, you know, Albert Einstein didn't publish relativity and everyone applauded and that was the end of that. There were a lot of people who were very disagreeable, who were very angry, who thought it was all wrong. Again, I bring up the famous incredible mathematician Lorentz, that his equations were used within the confines of relativity, and he dismissed the entire theory. So it's messy. Life is messy, and science is part of life, so science is messy as well. Yes, Ed.
My brother had a very successful post-doctoral research experience. But of course, he met his wife there.
Well, he was one of the lucky ones, I guess. But, you know, again, it can go all kinds of different ways. It has to do with the person who's going for the doctoral thesis. It has to do with the subject and the nature of the thesis. Unfortunately, it has a good amount to do with the person who is running your PhD program. And, you know, they could be incredibly helpful, or they could be dismissive and get someone crashing into a depression. Because it's a sensitive time. It's a very important time for people who want to get PhDs, and your ego can be smashed at little teeny pieces by the guy who's overseeing you. So I'm glad he had a good time.
Oh, I have to say about something.
Yeah?
She does not. Anybody who knew from his work school of White Hazard, he rented an apartment, and she was an excellent neighbor.
Oh, small world.
Well, that's how they met. The number of excellent neighbors anymore, 50 years later.
Yeah, you know, what can you do? Okay, thank you, Ed. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate your participation, and I hope I could cajole someone into participating, say, for another 10, 15 minutes, which we have left tonight. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they'd like to roll around, we have a little bit of free time and the opportunity if you're so inclined. So if you got one, stop.
WB2AA,
yes, Chad.
Hello, everybody. All right, so I'm going to talk about a subject I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. It's bedeviling me. It's this, it seems to be noise from power poles. I think maybe a year ago or something, somebody said that they knew somebody's call or something. Now, here the problem is here, I drove around and drove around and drove around. It's a wide area noise. It sounds like power pole noise. And it goes on and on and on, miles. I live near the border of Queens, New York City, which would be one electric company, and then I'm in Nassau County with another electric company. And it's miles. You can go miles and miles and miles, and I can hear this noise. It's bedeviling me, trying to receive an AM signal on my particular case, 40 meters. Does anybody know people to call to help me trace it, where this noise is coming from. I would need to know if somebody in Queens, that electric company, or NASA, or does anybody have any ideas how I can get some help to try to locate the area where this noise is coming from, Guy Roy?
I don't have a thought.
Okay, Ed.
Is that a standard AM broadcast band radio? It's widely able to turn down the sensitivity. If it's rising around with some of the decent tear, that's too much sensitivity. You want to be able to narrow down the sensitivity, to narrow down the range if possible. That would help you identify where it is. And most importantly, are you a Queens? Is the source of Queens or a NASA? Because that would be a good place to start, knowing which power company to go to.
Yeah, I think the story was that there was some kind of ombudsman at NASA electrical utility that was reachable, but I think that was 10 years ago. I don't know if the guy's still working there or what the status is. If anyone remembers those old stories about the utility guy that you could contact to check out whether there's something causing interference, please hit that push to talk and tell us, because unfortunately I don't think I ever wrote down any of the information. I don't even know if it was given. It was more of an anecdotal story at the time.
I don't have an answer, but I do have a thought.
Yeah?
I think usually the problem is often that the spark has friends there. But remember, the overhead lines, whether Con Ed or Lufo, LITA, PSCC, LI, all run around 5,000 volts AC. And it doesn't take much to get an arc. And you have a continuous arc that doesn't draw too much power, doesn't cause too much problems, but puts out a lot of EMI.
Yeah, it probably also puts out a significant amount of high-frequency sound. There are professional devices. Most of the time, I think they're meant to capture gas leaks in pipes and such, but that might be useful. Unfortunately, they're cost-prohibitive. Unfortunately, unless someone kind of recalls the name of that guy that you could contact, your best bet is to simply contact the utility company and explain that you believe that one of the transformers is shorting out. It's generating a lot of radio pollution and other problems, and maybe you could cajole them into coming by and checking it out. Because, you know, those are the guys, who, if you find anything, they're kind of the only guys who could fix it.
You realize Lufo has gone through so many changes to LITA, then PSEG, and there are a few elements in it, that the odds of that person flipping around are probably very low, even if it's still young.
AC2GS. I agree with you, Ed. Unfortunately, it's been too long since I heard the story. The chances are that he's enjoying himself in Florida in retirement.
Well, maybe he just changed jobs.
Yeah, that's true too. But again, I think ultimately your best bet or Chet's best bet is to contact the office and kind of go through the layers of bureaucracy until hopefully you are able to touch base with an engineer or an attaché to the engineer. Because again, the only one who's going to be able to fix the faulty transformers is going to be the utility. No one else is going to touch it.
Let me pick up for a second. I forgot to mention something about this. Let me see if I have it. Right. It's certain times only it comes on. It comes on at night time, like something is coming on, somebody has a lighting system or something. During the day, it's wonderful, it's fine. I just get natural Q or Nancy, from the band noise.